In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves...
Oh, yeah, it's time to talk movies.
Delicious.
Like we do every Monday afternoon, Alan Adams joining us right here in studio. Hello, Mr. Adams.
Well, hello, sir. How are you?
Wonderful. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you as well.
Now, I like the hat. Whose cap is that?
Oh, this would be the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
I love... Oh, yeah. See it on the side of the bill now.
Yeah, the whole thing over there. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice.
So, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. How's your Monday so far?
Okay. Busy. Yeah. Very busy. I'm sure you'll be shocked to hear this, but turns out puppies, they don't care if you have stuff to do.
Oh, no, not at
They're
all.
They're not the least bit interested in hearing about the work that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Trixie, bless her heart, rare form today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she really let her rip.
But I did see either your post or Sheridan's post that adoption may be getting close.
Yes, I believe there's been initial approval. I'm not entirely sure the full extent of the approval process, but it does seem like we will probably be bidding a fond farewell to little Trixie sometime in the relatively near future.
You've given her a lovely home for a few weeks.
I think so. And Sheridan and I have tried really hard to sort of maintain this idea that we are looking after someone else's dog.
Right.
And we are treating her like our own, but eventually she is going to go to her forever home, and I have no doubt that it will be a very happy place. The folks at Three Dogs are really pretty thorough when it comes to vetting their adopters, so I think it's going to be she's going to wind up somewhere lovely. Last I heard was a family in Portland was the one that was on the verge of taking her home, but again, I don't really know. And none of this means that I won't be an absolute mess when the time comes. Like, I mean, I think we can all agree. Like, I'm a soft touch under the best of circumstances. So the idea of saying goodbye to a dog who has been, you know, part of our lives for, you know, a couple of weeks, like a very constant presence.
Yes.
I will be emotional. Sheridan will be emotional. I believe Stella will basically be like, don't let the door hit you.
Right. Stella will yawn and look away and go, where's my couch?
Yeah. No, it's just, it's funny. Like, and when she's all fired up like this, the reality is Stella kind of bears the brunt of it in a lot of ways. She's been wonderful, but you can kind of tell that her nerves are starting to fray a little bit.
Sure. Now, on another note, as we catch up, wow, how much fun was Friday night getting back on stage doing our thing with the focus group?
It was a great time, wasn't it?
Wow.
Yeah.
And that audience.
Yep. No. Wonderful crowd came out to see the show. Felt really good to be out there again. There's always a little rust when you take such a lengthy hiatus. But all things considered, I thought we had a great show. We had a great audience. Everybody seemed to have a great time, and ultimately, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and we're gonna do it again sometime next month.
Yep. I actually bumped into Josh Gass from the Bangor Arts Exchange today while we were out walking the dogs, and we talked about. He's gonna send me over a list of potential dates, and we'll have a conversation about that and figure out when's best for us for the month of July.
Very nice. All right, movies. How many have you seen?
Oh my God, Rich! Like it was a very big movie weekend. To the point where I'm not entirely sure I'm going to have room for reviews of all of the movies that I saw.
Wow.
So I have a list of four that I'm prepared to talk about with you right now.
All right,
We have of course the one cinematic release of the bunch is Lightyear, Pixar's Lightyear. We've got on Apple TV Plus. We've got the latest from young wunderkind Cooper Rafe, Cha Cha Real Smooth. From Paramount Plus, we saw the very charming Jerry and Marge Go Large, starring friend of downtown Bryan Cranston. Last but certainly not least, the HBO Max is currently streaming the latest remake of the classic Father of the Bride, starring Andy Garcia. So What would you like to speak about?
Oh, my. I don't. Well, let's start with Lightyear, because that one's been getting a lot of buzz.
I see what you did there. Very good.
So sorry.
This was an interesting one for me, because we've talked about this in the past. I'm pretty much in the bag for Pixar. Even when their movies, you know, aren't great by their standards, they're still pretty good.
Right.
But this one seemed like a bit of a departure. It's like, okay, what? It was unclear for a very long time what exactly this movie was supposed to be, despite the just never-ending deluge of promotion. But it was unclear. Is it the toy? Is it what? And of course, so they give us a title card at the beginning of this movie that essentially, like, if they just said this from the beginning, everything would have been fine. But it's basically like, in 1995, a young boy named Andy got a toy from his featuring the star of his favorite movie. This is that movie.
Oh, well, there.
Yeah, and it's like, man, why couldn't you tell me this a year ago?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, why are we like dancing around it? Like, that's a perfectly acceptable conceit for this movie. All that being said, I was a little reticent going in. I mean, just because it seemed like a bit high concept. And Pixar's not afraid of going high concept, but this was just maybe a little more meta than I think they've gone in the past.
And that Toy Story bunch, it's like family after all these years.
Do you know what I mean? And, we're talking about, revisiting a character that's, almost 30 years old at this point, like just really digging in. What we got was kind of a, in a good way, an old-fashioned kind of like space adventure. Like it's very much reminiscent of the sorts of sci-fi adventure movies you would have gotten in the late 80s and early 90s, like from that sort of period of time. And it's a heck of a lot of fun. Chris Evans takes over the vocal role of Buzz Lightyear and is walks a very fine line. He's not doing Tim Allen, but you can hear influences of Tim Allen's cadence in his line delivery. I think it's the right choice. Despite what Tim Allen's former co-stars might think, I don't think you want Tim Allen in this movie. It's a younger Buzz Lightyear.
Right.
But anyway, so the basic gist is as follows. I just want to make sure I get this plot more or less right. So, Buzz Lightyear is a space ranger. He's working for Star Command, and they're out in space. They're on a mission. Sensors locate a heretofore undiscovered planet. He decides to go investigate. His best friend and commanding officer, Aisha Hawthorne, voiced by Uzo Aduba, they go to the planet's surface to investigate any sort of possibilities. But it turns out that the planet, its environs, and its residents, extremely hostile. So hostile, in fact, that they are prevented from fully executing an escape. And so they wind up marooned on this planet. 1 year later, now, and this is a huge ship with like hundreds and hundreds of people on it. So we're left 1 year later. They've essentially sort of started building a colony of sorts, basically trying to hold off the hostile environment while also trying to figure out a way to get home. And the biggest obstacle is they are unable to generate their the hyperspace crystals necessary for hyperspeed. But they're working on it, and they finally, after a year, reach a point where it's like, okay, this might work. And Buzz Lightyear is the one. He's going to take the ship up and test it going up and slingshotting around the sun and coming back. And they have to see if they can achieve hyperspeed. They do the test. He does make it back. The test is largely unsuccessful. He does not quite achieve hyperspeed. But when he gets back, it turns out his 4-minute flight on the planet, 4 years have passed.
Ooh.
And so, that presents complications, as you might imagine. And said complications only get more complicated because you got to keep testing. And so every time he does one of these tests, he loses 4 years. And so he, every time he comes back, his friends are older, their lives are moving forward, and he's sort of stuck in this, you know, in this sort of stasis. Hmm. His sole real companion is a robot cat named Socks, who is, to my mind, maybe the best part of this movie for a number of reasons. The biggest one being there's a wonderful running gag involving beep boop noises interspersed with meows that is just, it's hysterical. Like, I know I'm not doing it any justice, but when you watch it and you hear it, like, I laughed every time, like, out loud laughed every time. So this process keeps going. He's watching as his friends, you know, they start families, they grow older, and, you know, and deal with the consequences of getting older, in that sort of classic, you know, Pixar, just like, oh, just in case you thought this was different, here's a little emotional gut punch for you. Because that's what they do. But finally, they work out a possible solution. Only this time he winds up going even farther into the future. And when he comes back, turns out the planet has been invaded by a force of an army of robots. And there are just a scant few outside the laser defenses of the colony with any sort of way to combat the threat. And so he's left with these raw recruits, enthusiastic but inexperienced. And, they have to come up with a plan to defeat this entire robot army and blow up the ship that is apparently controlling them. But here's the thing, Rich. The enemy, he might be closer than you think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, it's well made in the way that all Pixar movies are made. It's beautifully animated. They've got this wonderful sort of, it's like they made a conscious aesthetic choice to sort of they're taking advantage of all the developments that have taken place in the last 25 years, but it's still reminiscent of what we saw in, you know, that those early Toy Story movies and something like that. It's wed in that way, much like Chris Evans' performance is wed in that way. And I think that's good. That being said, you could watch this. A kid could watch this movie and enjoy it without having any idea what Toy Story is. Mm. There are some jokes and some references, if you get them, you will enjoy yourself maybe a little bit more. But it's not necessary, and I think that's also an important sort of balance to strike, because, you know, do kids still watch Toy Story movies? I don't know. Like, it's been, I mean, like. The idea of trying to convince a 12-year-old to watch something that's, you know, 25 years old, like, I don't know if that's something that even happens anymore. But I think this is a wonderful way to sort of bring that character back to the forefront while also telling a different kind of story and a new story. And I think that's important. Apparently not as important as, you know, seeing the dinosaurs for the third time.
Right.
But you know, I mean, it's hard to scoff at a $50 million opening weekend. Sure. When people are still sort of gearing back up to going into the movie theaters. So yeah, I really enjoyed Lightyear. I had a good time. It's not like top tier Pixar. But you know, it's still a good Pixar movie, and you know, good Pixar movies are really good.
Absolutely. All right, what's next?
Let's talk about the Father of the Bride remake real quick. I don't need to spend a ton of time on this one, I don't think, but it's perfectly lovely. It's a perfectly charming little movie. Andy Garcia follows in the footsteps of Spencer Tracy and Steve Martin as the titular fathers of the bride in these movies. This time it's set in Miami, and we're dealing with a Cuban American family, which is lovely. Andy Garcia he plays a guy named Billy, Billy Herrera, who is a noted architect in the Miami area. Like, he's built his business up from nothing. He's in a long time marriage with his high school sweetheart, Ingrid, played by Gloria Estefan.
Wow.
Right. But their relationship is, they're struggling, to the point where they're in counseling, and they decide, you know what, maybe it's time for us to get a divorce. Their children are grown and out of the house, and they're just like, it's just not working anymore. So they decide they're going to tell the kids at family dinner that night. But then their eldest, Sophia, comes home. She's a recent law school grad working in New York City, comes home and is like, guess what? I'm getting married. And she's engaged to a fellow lawyer at her firm, and she's like, I want to get married, and I want to get married soon because we're taking these jobs in at a nonprofit in Mexico, and so we need to get married in a month. As you might imagine, a traditionalist like Billy Herrera is not super jazzed about any of this, particularly when he meets the gentleman in question and starts to wonder just what this guy is about, from just the fact that his daughter is the one who proposed, and the fact that he believes he's taking her away from him to Mexico. They don't want a big wedding, whereas Billy just wants to invite the entire extended family, have this huge family event. A lot of heads butting. Meanwhile, there's the pressure of keeping the secret of their own dissolving marriage as well. And then it just gets more complicated when you introduce the wedding planner that they found on Instagram, played by Chloe Fineman, who's lovely here. And then turns out that the fiancé, his dad shows up, and turns out the fiancé's dad is one of the richest men in Mexico. Like, he's this beer mogul. And so that escalates things. Billy's insecurities are brought to the forefront. And, you know, you just have a lot of complicated familial stuff going on. Look, if you've seen either of the previous Fathers of the Bride, like, you know how it goes. Like, but it is interesting because the structure is the same, but it's the details that are different. Sure. And if you can pull that off, then you have a movie that is, it's worth making is the right way to handle it, but I think this is a welcome addition, especially since, you know, there were almost 40 years between the first two movies, and we're talking about over 30 between between this one and the previous Steve Martin iteration. So it was time. Like, it's kind of a timeless story, and I mean, if we're gonna do remakes, like that, you could do a lot worse than doing this movie again. Right. It's fun. It's sweet. You know, there are a lot of pretty clever bits in it. Yes, I was. It's slight, like there's not a lot of heft to it, but it's perfectly charming. So if you dig this kind of movie, you will enjoy Father of the Bride.
Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Pass the Popcorn. What's up next?
Okay, let's talk about Jerry and Marge Go Large, which is a movie that only just fairly recently popped up on my radar. Like, I wasn't aware that this was a project that was ongoing, but it's got a marvelous cast. Bryan Cranston and Annette Bening star, and you've got supporting roles from Rainn Wilson is very good in this movie. Michael McKean is in this movie, but it's based on a true story, and it's funny because I remember reading this story when it first landed. It's a story about a guy, a former production manager at a cereal factory in Michigan, who always had a good head for math, and he's sort of gently pushed into retirement. He's at a loss. He doesn't know what to do with himself. And he discovers, purely by accident, a loophole in the lottery. I'm not going to try to go into the specifics explaining why it's a loophole. I'm not entirely sure I fully got it. But basically, it's called a roll down, in which any week where the jackpot isn't hit, the money sort of rolls down to two tickets that had fewer than the winning numbers, the amount of winning numbers. So if you had three right, or if you got four right or five right, like, you gained, you got money. And because of the way it was structured, if you were able to spend enough to buy enough tickets, you could essentially, the odds would essentially guarantee that you would turn some degree of profit. And so, you know, when Jerry discovers this, he's like, well, now I'm not gonna, you know, just sit around at the local Greasy Spoon or go out on my fishing boat, because, you know, I don't really like fishing. Instead, he's like, I'm gonna try this. And so he goes, doesn't tell his wife, but goes and pulls money out of their retirement account, and goes and buys a bunch of these tickets. And then he starts to win. And like, to the point where he's like hiding wads of cash, like in the pantry, and trying to figure out, you know, what he can do going forward. And finally, he fesses up to Marge, his wife. That would be Annette Bening. And she's like, great, let's do this. Because, you know, they're both retired and they're a little bored. They live in this small town that's struggling, a town in Michigan. And so they're like, let's do it. And they start doing it. But wouldn't you know it, this particular game gets discontinued in Michigan. So the only way you can play this game is in the state of Massachusetts. And so they load up the truck, pack their lunches, and they head off to Massachusetts and find a little you know, gas and go there in the middle of nowhere. I think Fall River is where they said it was. Working there is Billy, played by Rainn Wilson, who is initially skeptical, but eventually is just like, you know what, do what you're gonna do, and then they win, and they start building, and the question becomes, well, do we want to expand this? And so what they do is they form a corporation, and they basically sell shares to all their friends in town. So, like, their buddies, you know, their dear friends, and that would include Michael McKean, their accountant, played by Larry Wilmore, you know, their kids, like, everybody gets a share. Like, they sell shares for a certain amount of money, and that's the capital they use to buy the tickets. And then it just keeps rolling over and rolling over. And then the next thing you know, all of a sudden there's this wonderful, like, fund that's revitalizing the town. It's this wonderful thing, and everything seems great until... And, you know, it's always the kids. Always the kids. A group at Harvard also determines the loophole.
The smarty pants.
Right? And they're real jerks about it. And so we generate this sort of conflict, which escalates in ways both minor and major. But the reality is one of the joys of this movie is the stakes are relatively low. Like, it's not like nobody's in danger, like nobody's going to get hurt. Like, it's just, there's something to be said for movies where the only people who really receive any sort of, you know, negative attention, it's people who run the lottery. And who cares about those people?
Right.
Yeah, you know, the lottery. But yeah. And that's kind of how it goes. It's very sweet, very simple. It's the kind of movie that 20 years ago would have gone into theaters and done, you know, not huge box office, but people would have gone to see it.
And this is streaming only?
Yeah, it's on Paramount Plus, which is, you know, one of the second tier services. But it's funny. And in the review, I actually speak about it as I actually quote you in this review as, you know, because as we've spoken on a number of occasions, there is a dearth these days of what we call movies for grownups.
Yeah.
And this is that. Like, it's, you know, you've got some very talented stars who are a little older in your leads, wonderful, talented supporting cast, a simple, straightforward story based on a true story. It's got, you know, there's enough intrigue to keep you interested, but, you know, no one's, you know, there's no gunfire. Like, nobody's going to get their arms broken or anything like that. It's just, it's very very low key. The performances are great. Everybody's very talented, clearly having a good time. And I didn't know what I was going to get from this movie, but what I got was a reminder I don't know, there used to be more to it than just, you know, everyone expecting $100 million
right
at their opening with, you know, spandex and explosions and dinosaurs and cars and whatnot. Like, it was just nice. It felt very throwback in a very positive way.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that. What's our last one this week?
The last one, and a movie that I was really stoked to see was Cha-Cha Real Smooth, from writer director Cooper Rafe. This is his sophomore effort. His debut feature is a movie that I cannot say, whose title I cannot say on the air. It's a synonym for Poop House, which was very good. Did very well at Sundance back in 2020 or 2019, and it actually landed during the early stages of the pandemic in 2020. And this is his follow-up effort, which also did very well at Sundance, won the Audience Award And that is where it wound up getting picked up by Apple TV Plus. They bought the distribution rights for, I believe, $15 million. And yeah, it's just, it's so wonderful to see like a career sort of being born before your eyes, you know? Because again, a lot of the sort of obstacles that come with making movies have been removed from the equation. You know, it used to be that access to equipment to make movies was just prohibitive. Whereas now, anyone with a laptop and an iPhone can make a movie. That's great. However, it also makes it a lot more difficult to sort of, you know, wade through the noise to sort of pull out the signal that you're looking for.
Right.
But then, on the other hand, you have someone like Cooper Rafe, who is, like, he's in his mid-20s, and he's already, like, a Sundance darling. You know, he writes, directs, and stars in these films. He's a good director. He's a very good actor, and I think he might be a better writer than both of those. It's just he's just an incredible talent, this movie is sort of illustrative of that talent. The basic gist is Cooper Rafe plays this guy Andrew. He's just graduated from Tulane, doesn't really know what he's going to do with his life, so he moves home to the Chicago suburbs, moves in with his mom, played by Leslie Mann. And his stepdad, played by Brad Garrett, who's hilarious in this movie, winds up sharing a room with his much younger brother, David, played by Evan Asante. And that's kind of it. He gets a job at a crappy fast food type place called Meat Sticks, and is basically trying to save money so he can go to Barcelona to catch up with his college girlfriend, who's a Fulbright scholar and studying overseas. So one day, you know, he's kind of at sea, doesn't really know what he wants to do. His little brother, who's straight up in the middle of bar mitzvah season, is like, hey, you know, do you want to come with me to this thing? You know, mom can't go or whatever. And so he's like, yeah, all right, I'll go. Sure. And he winds up being sort of the life of the party in a lot of ways. It's also where, you know, he gets the kids dancing. Everybody's having a good time. That's also where he meets one of the mothers, a single mother named Domino, played by Dakota Johnson, and her artistic daughter, Lola. So he meets them. He really does, like, gets to the party super hyped. And all of a sudden, towards the end, he's just surrounded by all of these mothers. And they're like, we want to hire you to come do this for our children's bar and bat mitzvahs. And so he has, so instantly he has this side hustle where he's basically the party starter for these mitzvahs, which is hilarious. And I desperately want that to be a real thing that exists. It's up and down, as he works his way through it. You know, he's successful in some respects, not so successful in others, winds up getting into some confrontations, with folks due to, you know, he calls out some bullying that he sees, and then the parents are, you know, they take umbrage with that, et cetera, et cetera. But all of the while, he keeps seeing this woman, Domino, and he sort of befriends her and then starts feeling something more than friendship. And Domino, who is dealing with a relationship with a lawyer named Joseph, who is, you know, out of town for extended periods. And so she's kind of lonely. Lola, the daughter, doesn't really have make any sort of connections with anyone, but has sort of developed this attachment to Andrew, and so there's that factoring into it. He starts thinking maybe his girlfriend is seeing somebody else in Barcelona, and it just gets he's sad and confused and not sure at all what he wants, and so he starts projecting these desires and insecurities onto the people around him. That goes about as well as you would expect. But it's just, and that's kind of it. Like, I mean, there are some, you know, some third act conflicts and some resolutions and whatnot, but that's the basic gist of it. And that's kind of what's wonderful about it. Like, it's just like, he has such a wonderful knack for capturing that. I don't know. Malaise isn't the right word, but like that sort of
ennui.
Yeah, that comes from, like, you know, sort of moving into adulthood without having any idea what that really means. You know, and so he, of course, attaches himself to this other person who is also, you know, a bit adrift in their lives. And they just sort of, their ship passing, and they sort of make this furtive connection that neither one of them really fully understands. And yet they both, you know, sort of bear each other up a little bit. Rafe's a remarkable actor. He's got wonderful charisma. He manages to be both strikingly handsome and kind of goofy looking, which is going to prove to be a very valuable combination of circumstances as he goes forward. He's a wonderful director. He has a real knack for bringing forth strong performances, you know, and it doesn't hurt when he's got a cast as talented as this one to work with. But it's the writing, because he has such an ear for dialogue that feels real, that feels like spoken language rather than words on a page. You know, it sounds like something that, oh yeah, no, if a screenplay gets made into a movie, of course it's not, though. It's one of those things where you can just tell, like, it just hits a little different when you're listening to his dialogue. Again, his performance is great. Dakota Johnson, who, man, I had her pegged as kind of a joke coming out of the 50 Shades movies, right, and whatnot. She just, it's like she's legitimately, like, notably better in everything I see. Hmm. Like, she just keeps improving, and that is a surprise to me. I did not, we discussed nepotism on these airwaves in Hollywood a couple of weeks ago, and that was always where I kind of fell down on Dakota Johnson. It's like, oh yeah, well, I mean, you're here because of who your parents are, and that's probably true,
right?
And she's gotten more rope than I think a lot of people of her similar trajectory might have gotten, but she got there, and so that's great. Leslie Mann is wonderful as the sort of almost blindly supportive mom. Brad Garrett just crushes it as the sort of crusty stepfather who basically is just like, you know, so when are you gonna get a real job? You know, when are you going to move out of my house? that sort of energy, but still, like, affectionate in that way. The kids are all great. It's a wonderful, wonderful movie in so many different ways. You know, it's just, as I said, it's wonderful to sit and watch and just know that you're seeing the beginnings of what promises to be a very long and very, you know, a very exclusive kind of career. Like, we're talking about a guy who has a chance to be top tier. And I can say is I am just very much looking forward to seeing whatever comes next from Cooper Rafe.
Very cool. And where is that available? Is that streaming?
That is on streaming. That is on Apple TV Plus.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.
Whew, that's a lot.
It is a lot.
Nicely done.
Thank you, man.
Good luck with Trixie.
Yes. Thank you.
Alan Adams talking movies here on Pass the Popcorn. Take a break. Good, Bad, and Ugly up next.
Sweats Tire is a family-owned business serving the community since 1966.